This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Hospital Radio for Northumberland and North Tyneside.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
Our first piece of music this morning is a medley of songs by Hillsong, and it features three beautiful hymns all woven together. They are So Will I, Reckless Love, and No Longer a Slave. And they remind us of the power and might, and also the love and the faithfulness of God our Creator, who sets us free. We are no longer slaves if we are His children. Here's Hillsong United.
Start before the beginning of time. With no point of reference, you spoke to the dark and fleshed out the wonder of light. And as you speak, a hundred billion galaxies are born.
Today's Gospel reading is about two people who are set free by Jesus when he was in Capernaum. One lady is healed from a debilitating illness. One young girl is raised from death. Both are miraculously set free. Perhaps we can pray for some miracles of our own today too. We hear about them in our Gospel reading today, which is Mark chapter 5. I'm reading from verse 21, and because it's rather a long reading, I'll be splitting it into two parts. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me." But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." Let's listen to a song which opened last week's program, all about the stilling of the storm, because the second verse tells us about this man, Jairus, and his daughter, and the miracle of Jesus raising her to life after she died.
See the stricken boat as it is tossed upon the sea. Hear the fearful cries that wake the man from Galilee. He stands before the raging, speaks peace and harmony. Winds and waves obey. He is the man who calmed the sea.
Desperate father's anguish plea. Heal my dying child, he begs the man from Galilee. With words that banish sorrow, don't fear, but just believe. Don't live again, commands the man who calmed the sea. And as she stands before them, what joy from agony. He's the master and the maker. He's the man who calmed the sea. Shrouds the hill of Calvary. High upon the cross, there hangs the man from Galilee. The earth, it quakes with sorrow. The sky grows dark with grief. All creation mourns to lose the
That song was "The Man Who Calmed the Sea" from an album called The Journey by Stuart Townend. One of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, it said there, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. How easy it would be to overlook the significance of what was really happening here. For Jairus was a ruler in the synagogue at Capernaum, an influential man, an administrator. It was his job to supervise worship and make sure the synagogue ran smoothly. He may well have been a critic of Jesus, one who had already viewed him with suspicion. So by approaching Jesus for help then, Jairus would have had to put to one side his prejudice and his judgmental attitude. By prostrating himself at Jesus' feet, he had to swallow his pride and perhaps surrender his position at the synagogue, who knows. And since his daughter's life is fading, he can't put off the moment any longer. I wonder if these attitudes have ever stood in the way of any of us drawing nearer to God. You can just imagine what some onlookers might have been saying about Jairus when he responded to Jesus in this way. Look at him grovelling. How undignified. He's actually gone to that heretic for help. But Jairus, in his desperation, throws himself down at Jesus' feet, humbling himself before the one where his only hope of a cure lies. The next hymn is based on Psalm 42, which opens with the words, "As the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God." This creature is longing, panting for water, perhaps after a long chase. And in this way, the psalmist tells of his deep thirst too for the things of God. Here is Robin Mark singing "As the Deer."
As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you.
You alone.
You alone are my strength, my shield. To you alone may my spirit yield. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you.
You're my friend, and you are my brother, even though you are a king.
You're my friend, and you are my brother, even though you are a king. I love you more than any other, so much more than anything.
You alone are my strength. First verse in the chorus again, as the deer pants for the water.
As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you.
I very nearly put off the most important part of my life at a renewal day in a Durham church by remaining firmly glued to my seat when people in the congregation were invited out to the front of the church to be prayed for. For 3 years I had had no faith at all in a loving God because of my father's suffering when he had cancer. But I knew there was a massive vacuum in my spiritual life, for I'd always believed in God. But fear had begun to dominate my thoughts, particularly at night time. I so much wanted to go forward and be prayed for at that meeting. I was thirsting for God too. But first, pride leapt into my thinking. I'm respectable, I reasoned. I'm a school teacher, for goodness sake. Besides, someone might recognize me. I was also suspicious of the Christians around me for being so enthusiastic and emotional about their faith. With hands raised in the air, they were lost in worship and praise during the hymn singing, and I'd never seen anyone that keen before. I must have been slightly prejudiced against this kind of behaviour. And of course, again, like Jairus, I procrastinated. I sat thinking about it. I was putting off the moment. And then the service ended. I was devastated. But I overcame all that and later at the close of the service found the courage to take that all-important first step, and I went forward and was prayed for. My life was totally transformed in that moment too, as something like golden rain just poured through me. My thirst was satisfied. Here's a lovely song sung by Carrie Underwood, which tells of a car accident, but in it a young woman, believing she is about to die, cries out to the only person who can save her. It's a song called Jesus, Take the Wheel.
She was driving last Friday on her way to Cincinnati on a snow-white Christmas Eve. Going home to see her mama and her daddy with the baby in the back seat. 50 miles to go and she was running low on faith and gasoline. It'd been a long, hard year. She had a lot on her mind and she didn't pay attention. She was going away too fast. Before she knew it, she was spinning on a thin black sheet of glass. She saw both her lives flash before her eyes. She didn't even have time to cry. She was so scared. She threw her hands up in the air.
There's also another person in desperate need in this same passage, this woman with a hemorrhage, who didn't want to draw attention to herself. In fact, she shouldn't have been there in the crowd in the first place because of the nature of her illness. By law, she was considered unclean, unfit to even enter a place of worship, unfit to be touching anyone. Nevertheless, she somehow found the courage to push forward towards Jesus in order to touch his hem. Despite the crowd pressing in on him, Jesus knew that the power had gone out from him, and he stopped to find out who was touching him. But I find it interesting that Jesus wasn't so focused on the task ahead that he couldn't be diverted for just a moment to pay attention to this poor soul in need of his care. I knew of a lady who fainted in church once, and the man in front commented later that he hadn't turned around because it had happened at the precise moment of the consecration of the bread and wine. Now, what do you think Jesus would have done? Would he not have picked her up and seen to her needs first? Let's listen to "What a Fellowship," sung here by Iris Dement, and in the chorus it sings of leaning on the everlasting arms.
What a fellowship, what a joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms. What a blessedness, what a peace is mine, leaning
Gospel reading goes on to say, while Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher any more?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. It's often the case, isn't it, as with this beautiful story, that all too often we can call on God as a last resort, when we're desperate and there's no other course of action open to us, and we've tried everything else and it's failed, just like this woman and like Jairus. But it doesn't really matter how or why we come to Jesus, does it? As long as we come. But what about when we have prayed and our prayers haven't been answered as we'd hoped? I wrote our final song, which says, "Giving it all to you," because ultimately God has our eternal destiny in his hands. Give it to God anyway. This is Sheila Hamill on New Day Dawning, and my thanks to Andrew Ridgewick, my technical assistant. What would I do without him? Here to finish is that song, "Giving It All to You," and as you give your all to God, may he grant you a miracle of healing this day. May God be with you right now, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and may he bless the lives of all those who know you and love you. Amen. Bye for now.
All my endless imaginings, the worries that are mine, my doubts where you're leading me, the pruning of the branches on the vine. Oh Lord, I'm giving it all to you. Drawn to walk your way, resisting.